No, that is true.
It's not possible.
We don't live to infinity, which, of course, is great. But we might, if we actually ate the kinds of food that's available now with the kinds of additives that are designed to make us healthy. I mean, we've heard for years and years and years about adding, say, iodine to salt or vitamin D to milk. But there's a tremendous growth in so-called nutraceuticals. And that is food with additives that are put into the food in a way that is beyond maybe our intuition. Say, omega-3s in orange juice. That's fish oil in orange juice. To explain this trend and to help us understand how it's actually accomplished, Julia Moskins of the New York Times joins us. Julia, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Nutraceuticals are an interesting example of food processing, right? Because it's interesting science how you get fish oil into orange juice. But it's also a trend that's been around for quite some time.
Absolutely. Fortified foods have been a huge public health success and were in the 20th century. And so we have to be careful not to be too automatically dismissive of these new efforts by many of the major food companies to put added nutrients in their food. Those added nutrients are called nutraceuticals, and the foods that contain them are often called functional foods. The way that the companies now are able to get the food, the nutraceutical ingredients in, is imperceptible in a way that didn't used to be possible.
Now, why is that the case? I mean, why don't I taste fish in orange juice?
That is because of amazing technology called microencapsulation, for the most part, in which tiny beads of oil can be encapsulated in fat or protein or gelatin so small that they are not perceptible by the human tongue. And that's a big issue for food processors. Nobody wants their food to taste different. Nobody wants to, as one technologist said to me, burp up fish oil after drinking the orange juice.
What if you're a vegetarian, though? Does that still make the orange juice? It's not a vegetarian orange juice anymore.
No, it's not. All of it has to be carefully labeled and clearly labeled. That is how the FDA does regulate all foods. They don't regulate these foods differently, but you would see on a container of Tropicana Healthy Heart orange juice that it says quite prominently contains sardines, anchovies, and tilapia. But now, you do have to be looking.
Now, we should add that a lot of the data on whether these things are actually good for you, whether the amounts that you would consume in orange juice actually contribute to health, the jury is really pretty much out on a lot of this data.
Yes, it's completely out. And this is the big difference between vitamin D fortification, say, and Dan and yogurt with probiotics. The public health research simply hasn't been done. And there was a landmark court decision in 1999, Pearson versus Shalala, that allowed food packagers and makers of dietary supplements to label their packages with health claims that had not been proven in a new way. And we're seeing the results of that court decision showing up on the shelves now.
Well, let's look on the positive side. I mean, there are great successes of food additives in terms of improving public health. I mentioned iodine in salt. What was that intended to correct, and how well did it do?
That did a great job of eliminating a terrible disease called goiter, in which people's glands became very swollen in their necks. And many of these things were huge problems. And there is a great deal of proof in the value of certain of these products, especially omega-3 fatty acids, even in this new form. But a lot of things like antioxidants is a term that gets tossed around all the time. Now, a tomato has plenty of antioxidants, and no one has a doubt that that is a healthy product. But when you have pulped a tomato, treated it to extract the lycopene, and then microencapsulated that lycopene, and then drink it in, a strawberry smoothie, no one is quite sure how that might affect you nutritionally.
That's kind of a next question, which is, at some point, are you sort of creating food Frankensteins? I mean, if you want the nutrition from a tomato, eat a tomato.
That is really what it comes down to, you know, and without, obviously, as a food journalist, no one tends to be more cynical about the efforts of food companies to try to sell you things that are more nutritional than food. However, many of these things are hitting the shelves, so we just thought it was time to clear up some of these claims.
Well, but it's also the case that the entire business model of the food industry is to create these value-added propositions by changing the food in some way, either changing the shape or the texture or the flavor. And the food additives, a sort of health component, is just another part of the same business model. It's not going to go away.
Absolutely. It is all about value added. And many of them do have added value. It's simply that we're really not sure what they are. Kraft is about to come out with a cheese that includes something that was developed by a green pesticides company, which is actually a form of cheese that can kill intestinal parasites.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Oh, that's good. What do the farmers think about that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the farmers are working hard and food prices are up and they're in favor of anything that sells more food generally. I mean, part of the problem right now is that there was a much more of a market for premium priced products with cereals with added honey, roasted almonds, that kind of thing. And with the rise in transport costs and raw materials costs, manufacturers are looking for a much more inexpensive model for adding value to food.
Well, there's eating healthy, and then there's eating healthy food additives, and they're not the same thing. Julia Moskin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Julia.
Julia Moskin is a writer for the New York Times dining section, and her report on food additives is in today's New York Times? Or
yes, it is.
It's in today's New York Times. Thank you so much for joining us.
You just want to throw your hands up sometimes.
Yeah. Well,
you've got to spend 10 hours in the grocery store reading all the labels and then trying to figure out if any of the claims are actually true. But that's another hole. I will not go off on a tangent.
I always have a glass of fish oil when I have my orange juice. We're talking about bailouts. How much should the government be willing to bail out financial companies in need? Prince Charles sent us an email. I have not heard or read that the federal government has conditioned its bailouts to provide benefits to the public. I would condition bailouts on the companies providing mentoring and instruction at educational institutions serving poor and working class communities. We suspect that's not the actual Prince
Charles.
That's
interesting, though. That's an interesting thought. We want to hear what you think. 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. And here's your takeaway for today.
Congratulations. You now own AIG.
That's Newsweek's Daniel Gross. That's right. For $85 billion, we are all now the proud part owner of an insurance giant. Congratulations, John.
Yeah, well, call me out there, folks. If you want me to write you an insurance policy, I'd be happy to do it. I now own AIG. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Adora Udoji, and this is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.